Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
He's got arms like legs. He's got hands on his feet. He's got a nose like a donut. He's got a tendency to overeat. He don't use tools or weapons. He don't eat meat. He likes to stick to the bushes. Tends to avoid the street.
But it rides my... The mostly forgotten explorer Paul Du Chaillu introduced the world to gorillas. His methods were attacked and his work discredited during his lifetime, but he also experienced fame and redemption. Author Monty Real illuminates the little-known tale of the 19th century explorer in his new book, Between Man and Beast, An Unlikely Explorer, The Evolution Debates and the African Adventure That Took the Victorian World by Storm. Although he had no specific scientific background, the young adventurer was hoping to tell the world what he had seen there, gorillas. He returned to London amid the heated debate over Charles Darwin's On the Origin of Species. It's quite a story. It's a pleasure to welcome Monty Real to the roundtable. Monty, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate your time.
Thanks very much for having me.
A delight. Again, the name of the book is Between Man and Beast, An Unlikely Explorer, The Evolution Debates and the African Adventure That Took the Victorian World by Storm. Tell us a little bit about this unlikely explorer, Paul Du Chaillu, and how he came to even find himself in this position.
Yeah, Paul Du Chaillu was, as the subtitle of the book states, a very unlikely explorer. He actually went to Africa for the first time, to the west coast of Africa in Gabon, in 1848, and he went to join his father, who was a French trader on the coast there. So he arrived as this 17-year-old kid, and just by chance, just before that, in late 1846, early 1847, the very first gorilla skull known to science was collected by a missionary who lived very nearby there. His name was John Layton Wilson. And as chance would have it, Du Chaillu got to know Wilson very well. In fact, Wilson sort of adopted him as his son, and Du Chaillu went to live with Wilson instead of his father. So Du Chaillu was hearing all these stories of this animal, which at that time was unknown. It was called an angina by the native tribal hunters, the few who had seen one of these in the wild. And eventually, the skull that Wilson had collected had gone to America, to Harvard. And an anatomist at Harvard was the first person to classify the animal, and it gave it the name the gorilla. So at this time, you know, Du Chaillu is a 17-year-old kid. He's hearing all these stories of this animal. There's very little information that's solid about it. All he's hearing are kind of these myths and legends. The native hunters there in Africa would tell stories about how the angina was just the king of the forest. It possessed supernatural strength. It would invariably attack humans, they said, if they encountered them in the forest. So it was just this creature of near mythical proportions. So it really ignited Du Chaillu's interest when he was a young man. And a few years later, when he was in his 20s, he decided to launch an expedition to go into the interior Africa and try to be the first person to confront and describe gorillas in the wild.
And how much background did he have going in of what it is that he wanted to find and how he was going to go about that?
Well, he was really untrained. He didn't have any scientific training, any formal training. He had learned to sort of learned a lot about the flora and fauna of Central Western Africa from living with Wilson, who was something of an amateur naturalist himself. But he had gone to the United States to teach French, actually. And while he was there, he made some connections with the Philadelphia Academy of Natural Science. And he had formed sort of a gentleman's agreement with them, saying, I'm going to go back, go into Africa, and I'll collect specimens and send them to the Academy, and the Academy can display them. So he went into this expedition with the idea that he was going to collect specimens. The gorilla, of course, was sort of the prize specimen that he was after. But it was really sort of a kind of a do-it-yourself adventure that he launched himself on. If you compare his expedition with other expeditions that were launched in that era, his is very small. If you compare it to Henry Morton Stanley, who a few years later went to search for David Livingstone, for example, by Stanley's estimation, he had carried about 11,000 pounds of equipment into Africa when he started his expedition. And he had hundreds of porters who would help him carry all of that equipment and guides. Du Chaillu, on the other hand, all of his equipment that he went into Africa with and all of the men who accompanied him fit into one single dugout canoe. So this was very much sort of a kind of a seat of the pants, do-it-yourself adventure that he launched himself on.
And you write in the book that that's really one of the reasons that Du Chaillu and his contributions to science have more or less really been dropped over the years from the historical record.
Yeah, his first observations when he came back, he brought his gorilla specimens out of Africa. He emerged essentially in 1859 with more than 20 gorilla skins, and he took them first to New York and then to London, and it really started this sort of sensation, kind of sparked a fever among the population. They wanted to learn about this new ape. But there were some scientists who started to look at what he was describing, and they found a lot of flaws. He had, for example, no scientific training in how to make maps. So the maps that he provided of where exactly he went into Africa were seriously flawed. And some of the animals, the other species that he claimed to have found and that he described as new and undiscovered, had actually been discovered by scientists before him. He just didn't know that. So he had made mistakes, and there were things that critics and scientists could kind of look at and pick apart and criticize him for. But the errors that they found, it really kind of sparked a lot of distrust in everything he said. So people began to question whether he even went into the forest. They thought, well, maybe he made it all up. He stayed on the coast, collected these skins from native hunters, and, you know, told all these fantastical stories about confronting gorillas and didn't actually do it. So he had to actually launch a second expedition to sort of prove himself, to try to redo the things that he had done a few years before. He tried to do a lot. And, you know, as we mentioned, he didn't have scientific training, so he was trying to collect and present information about natural history, also about the tribes of the region. He was just spreading himself very thin, so the specialists in later years, zoologists, ethnographers, folklorists, they would look at his work, and he really wasn't a specialist, so it was hard for them to kind of claim him as one of their own. And so a lot of his work in later years fell through the cracks. There's been sort of a reevaluation of his contribution in recent years, though, and it's kind of become the starting place for historians who are looking at that region of the world, because there was really not a lot of written history that came out of it before Du Chaillu went in there.
The name of Monty Real's book is Between Man and Beast, An Unlikely Explorer, The Evolution Debates and the African Adventure That Took the Victorian World by Storm. We'll continue our conversation with Monty Real after this short break. songs.
Are you ready? Are you ready to step with Ima?
Welcome back to the Roundtable. Monty Real is our guest, author of the new book, Between Man and Beast. The book is published by Doubleday. Since Darwin had just published On the Origin of Species, I guess you can certainly see why Du Chaillu's discovery of the gorilla sparked the debate that it did. And we've been talking about this all morning on the program, but what do you think it was about the gorilla that really took hold of our collective imagination?
Well, part of it certainly was the timing. As you mentioned, Darwin's book came out in late 1859, in November of 1859. That's exactly when Du Chaillu emerged from Africa with his gorilla specimens.
Which, that timing shocked me.
Yeah,
because I thought it was much later, or much earlier, rather, that we would have known about the gorilla before 1850.
Yeah, the first skull had been found in about a decade before that, but
yeah,
these were the first real good specimens, and the first ones that were shown and sort of could be seen by the public in London. So this kind of, you know, really did spark that sensation. But it was also the fact that scientists at that time believed that the gorilla was mankind's closest relative in the animal kingdom. But it also seemed like sort of a monster. The way Du Chaillu's descriptions of it were presented, just the physical aspect of the gorilla also sparked all sorts of fears and churned up all these passions that really kind of sparked the debate to rise to a sort of hotter level.
What did Du Chaillu make of Darwin? What did Darwin make of Du Chaillu?
Well, Du Chaillu sort of kept out of the nuts and bolts of the debate. He was kind of he was taken in London and introduced to all of the Royal Geographical Societies and the scientific academies by a scientist named Richard Owen. And Richard Owen was one of Darwin's main opponents when Darwin presented his theory. Owen believed in the process of evolution, but he believed that it worked differently than Darwin had described. And so Owen kind of set himself up as Darwin's main nemesis in the early days of this debate. And Owen saw the gorilla as a way to kind of put Darwin's theories to the test. And Owen wanted to use the gorillas to prove that the gorilla brain was so far different from the human brain that the slow processes of natural selection couldn't have they wouldn't have been related. Owen wasn't able to really make this argument in the end. His main opponent in that argument was Thomas Huxley, known as Darwin's bulldog. And Huxley made a lot of good arguments and convincing arguments against Owen's points. But Owen had kind of adopted the gorilla as his symbol, and that's one of the things that kind of made the gorilla the face of the evolution debate at that time. Du Chaillu sort of stood back from the real the nuts and bolts of the debate because he really wasn't prepared to get into a discussion like that. He had kind of stumbled into the middle of this, as he did a lot of different debates at that time.
You get the idea that in your research of Du Chaillu, one of the things that comes up again and again is how tough it is to tell the story of his early years, because he kept a lot of the information back and quite frankly lied about it several times because of ultimately what he was hiding.
Right. He would always talk about his father, the French trader in Gabon, but he would never speak of his mother, and he would never really come clean about where he was born. when people would ask him, he might say he was born in Paris. That was a common answer. Sometimes he said he was born in New Orleans, other times in New York. So you had all of these conflicting stories. In fact, when he died, if you look at newspaper clippings or encyclopedia entries, you can find five or six different birthplaces listed for him. The reason he was hiding that is because records indicate that his mother was actually African and that he himself was of mixed race origin. And so he was hiding this fact. At that time, of course, the places that he was presenting his information, the Royal Geographical Society, the Royal Society, there were no minorities allowed in those places. And there were actually rumors that had started going around at the height of his fame, really pretty vicious rumors about his background, insinuating this mixed race past. And they were really sort of circulating to try to undermine some of his credibility. So he was always, he was never upfront about that. He always tried to kind of hide where he came from. And it was because of, as the records that have been found since then indicate, that he was born in Réunion, which is an island off of the east coast of Africa near Madagascar. And it was a place that was really kind of a melting pot of cultures. And there was a black, kind of a mixed black and white culture there that that he seemed to be a part of.
You, for the book, you went and retraced Du Chaillu's steps in Gabon. Obviously, a lot has changed since 1850, but you do talk in the book about there is a lot that is still the same.
Yes, some of the areas where he traveled, they were really areas that were hard to get to. A lot of those areas have been very much preserved, and some of them are protected as natural parks, as national parks in Gabon right now. I actually took a boat up some of the river tributaries where Du Chaillu had traveled, and started early in the morning and went in a motorized boat all day until dusk. The whole time that we went, not only did I not see another human being, but I didn't even see a sign of human presence. So this is one of the very few areas that still exist where you can do that, where there's just, you know, sort of almost a pristine type environment. There were lots of, you know, elephants, hippopotamus, everything, you know, just enormous wealth of wildlife there. I did visit a couple of guerrilla research stations, camps that are located out there in the forest. And talked with, you know, some of the experts who are working on both rehabituating gorillas to go back into the wild. These are gorillas that had been captured. And also scientists who are really trying to develop research stations where they can observe lowland gorillas in their natural environment.
And there are a lot of stories with those that you met along the way, a lot of stories that they had about gorillas and a lot of folklore and myth.
Yeah, one of the things that I did when I would try to speak with local hunters there, people who still today, you know, live out in small villages in the forest, and who might have encounters with gorillas, and I just wanted to see what the local perception of them were. Of the animal was. And of course, a lot has changed. And there have been, you know, massive education efforts to try to, you know, really drive home the fact that gorillas are not a threat to humans, and humans, in fact, are a much greater threat to gorillas. But there are still some of those almost mythical stories that are passed around even today about gorillas and about how powerful they are, about their capabilities of strength. It's really sort of part of the folklore of that region, and that folklore has really hung around today. There are even stories that you'll hear still of people who tell of friends or relatives that they know who've been abducted by guerrillas. And these are some of the same stories that Du Chaillu was hearing back in the 1850s when he was going out there. So it's one of those animals that, you know, sort of tall tales and stories really stick to. And even today, that's really, really evident when you go and talk to people there.
In the minute or so that we have left, through the book and through your research, what do you think the legacy of Du Chaillu and his work with the gorillas will be ultimately?
Well, he really kind of, you know, he brought the animal to the world's attention. And the gorilla could not have made a more splashy intro into sort of the world consciousness. And I think it really, you know, his introduction of it made the gorilla an animal of fascination. And I think today that really can help in protecting gorillas. They're an animal that attract a lot of interest from people in a different way than they did back then. It used to be a monster, and now it's something, it's a fascinating animal that is worthy of protection. And I think, you know, Du Chaillu was sort of the starting point in our relationship with gorillas. And that story is still sort of unfolding today.
The name of the book is Between Man and Beast. It is published by Doubleday. Monty Real, I thank you so much for taking time out of your day to do this for us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Best of luck with the book. Thank you. Again, Between Man and Beast, An Unlikely Explorer, The Evolution Debates, and the African Adventure That Took the Victorian World by Storm. Monty Real is the author. It is published by Doubleday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.